This is Cave Scott Allen of otico.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from lazycoder.com.
Welcome to Herding Code. This episode is being recorded at NDC Oslo 2017. Today we are what is today even? June 3rd? It's in the teens. It's definitely in the teens. So we are talking to John Skeet. The 14th. Okay. I was pretty sure on the date of the year, though. 2017, I'm pretty good at that. So I thought we would start, as we're talking to John Skeet, and I thought we'd start by talking to you about what you do at Google and how does that relate to .NET and C# and all that.
So a few years ago, I would have had to say not at all. But I'm absolutely delighted that for the last probably 2 years now, I have been almost exclusively writing C# at Google, doing various other little bits and pieces, but basically trying to make the Google Cloud Platform experience an awesome one for C# developers. So I sort of view it as a dual-pronged mission. So part of it is if you're a C# developer looking for a public cloud to develop on, then GCP, Google Cloud Platform, should be your natural choice as it provides all the most fantastic APIs, and we provide a nice, idiomatic, smooth way to access it. And then the other side, which is sort of kind of a bit more competitive within Google, I guess, is if you know that you want to be on Google Cloud Platform, but you're saying, you know, which language should I develop on, then clearly you should use C# because it's an awesome language. And again, we provide a nice, smooth, easy path to use all the awesome GCP features from C#.
That second one seems like a tough challenge, right? I mean, you've got a lot of Java developers, probably some other... What are some other languages at Google?
So these days, we really try to run the gamut. So Java, Go, PHP, Python, Ruby, Node, you name it. If it's a reasonably popular language, we are absolutely trying to make GCP as accessible as possible to you.
Okay. So how do you, amongst all those different languages... As you're talking to other developers who have all these options, where do you see C# and .NET fitting in? You know, when is it a good fit? When is it not?
So at the moment, it's a best fit on the server side. I very much see the future as mobile with Unity and Xamarin should be a very natural fit. And particularly with Unity starting to embrace more recent versions of the Mono runtime, makes the integration a lot simpler. I don't have anything. I'm not announcing anything. I'm not here officially, you know.
You hear it here first.
But it feels to me like C# has the best cross-platform mobile story available. So I would very, very much like that to be a story that extends onto GCP. And on the server side, really, I'm not saying I would be out of a job, but my job would be a considerably harder sell if it weren't for the great stuff that Microsoft's been doing. So .NET Core landed at exactly the right time for the team that I'm in to be saying, right, well, we provide you a good story if you want to deploy your apps on Windows VMs on GCP, but hey, you want to bring .NET Core on a Linux container, then sure, use Google Container Engine, use App Engine Flexible Environment. All these things just become possible now that .NET is portable. It's a lovely story to be part of, and one where I think both Microsoft and Google can sort of embrace each other as partners and competitors at the same time, and everyone wins. It's great.
What came first, the decision to push more support for .NET or .NET Core?
Oh, I don't know whether there's any causation between them anyway.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that when I started in the team... which our product manager is Chris Sells of ex-Microsoft. So, you know, he's already... It didn't take much for Chris to say, we should really be selling more to Windows customers and, hey, .NET customers, and that means not just Windows anymore. I think .NET Core was already started to some extent. I think it was still back in the Project K days, so quite a while ago. And it was before quite so much had been open-sourced. So the transformation... was still ongoing, and everything that we've seen has been, hey, this is an amazing thing that we can do. So PowerShell being able to run on Linux, hey, that means we can build PowerShell commandlets that let you access your Google Cloud Platform resources. And yeah, that's a good thing, even if the PowerShell commandlets only run on Windows. It's even better if you can write all your scripting for PowerShell things and they happen to still work on Linux. This is, as I say, everyone wins.
So if I'm familiar with Azure and I understand, you know, there's VMs and the IaaS side, and then I can go over to, like, you know, the platform as a service and then all the way down to, like, functions. How do things fit in with the Google offerings? What do I have available there?
So I view it certainly as a sort of spectrum of how much control do you want versus how much do you just want to say, here's my code, go run it. So we've had App Engine for a very, very long time, and currently C# does not run on App Engine standard. It's the same sandboxed environments as before. But there's also now App Engine flexible environment, which is, you know, bring a container. Okay.
Is that Docker, Kubernetes? What
kind of? It's definitely supports Docker. It may support Rocket. I don't know the details on that kind of thing. But to be honest, to some extent, you don't need to care, because from Visual Studio, you can right-click and say, just deploy to App Engine flexible environment without having Docker on your machine or anything, which is awesome. So App Engine flexible environment does a bunch of the management-y things for you, so you don't need to set up anything. You need to basically have a Google Cloud Platform project and probably have enabled App Engine flexible environment, and that's kind of it. Then you can also deploy to Kubernetes instead, where you're saying, hey, well, I want a little bit more control. I want to be able to say, well, I've got these nodes in total, and I've got these microservices over here, these microservices over there. So to me personally, that feels a bit more like my sweet spot of make it easy. Give me some machines, and I don't care. I really, really don't want to be setting up machines or doing OS patching or whatever. But give me some things and I will describe my application to you as a bunch of connected services with certain amounts of, well, I want this level of redundancy for this service, this level for this service, etc. So Kubernetes and Google Container Engine is a great fit for that, where Container Engine is just Google's implementation of Kubernetes. So the other nice thing about Kubernetes is if you don't want to be using Cloud Platform, you could say, okay, I'll use the Kubernetes implementation on AWS or on Azure. And likewise, of course, the reverse. You know, if you're still on Azure, then investigate Kubernetes. And if it turns out that that Google Cloud Platform is a better fit, then it'll be reasonably easy to move things over.
Yeah.
Then there's coming towards the sort of more control aspect. Obviously, you can still fire up your own VMs. And within those VMs, you could run your own Kubernetes cluster on VMs that you manage yourself, or you can just fire up a load of Windows VMs and deploy IIS just as normal. And then there's Cloud Functions, which doesn't currently support C#, but that's very much the serverless offering. Just give us little snippets of code. Don't give us a whole container. Just give us the bits of code that you want us to run.
Tell us about the shirt you're wearing.
Okay, so I'm wearing a Code Like a Girl t-shirt, and my midlife crisis is feminism, basically. Some men buy a Porsche, I adopted feminism. It's just a little bit different. This really happened to some extent gradually and to some extent very suddenly, in that I could pinpoint, I think it was something like September 2014, I think. I could certainly pinpoint it by looking at my Amazon receipts. I read the Geek Feminist Wikia, you know, not all of it because it's enormous, but you know, enough of it. I spent an hour or two reading that and thought, yeah, there is more broken in our industry and in the world than I had possibly realized. And so I ordered a few books. Everyone Should Be a Feminist by Bell Hooks, Everyday Sexism by Laura Bates. My feminist reading list could go on for a very long time, but those are two very good starting points. And it has transformed the way I view the world really quite significantly, and hopefully how I behave myself. Yeah, I'm not saying that I was previously a rampant, sexist, awful person, but there can be things that you can be unconsciously biased, and I'm sure I am still unconsciously biased, but being aware that it's a problem, I can sort of try to watch myself a bit more. I'm now the member of a political party, the Women's Equality Party in the UK. It was founded about 6 months after I started getting interested, and then I joined sort of 6 months after that. So that's been an interesting thing to be a very small part of. But it really has been eye-opening to see and just become more aware of the way that if I walk down the street and a woman or maybe a black person walks down the exact same street and sees exactly the same things. You know, they could be a step in front of me or a step behind me. They will experience the world differently because of their previous experiences and the reactions of those around them. And I guess intellectually I've probably been sort of aware of that, but not nearly the scale of it. So this is something that I feel I'm not nearly as effective on as I would like to be. I want to genuinely be making a difference. At the moment, I'm literally now just a talking mouth. But you know, I'm doing what I can, and hopefully that will increase over time. But it's definitely something that I'm very interested in. It's great to see we've got quite a lot of women speaking at NDC Oslo this year. I would definitely like to see more. And I think the speaker ratio is better than the attendee ratio. And this is something that we need to fix. You know, we're a bunch of white guys in a room. Yeah. Okay. How hard is it for someone else to come into that room? What are we not doing that we should absolutely be doing to make this a better place? I mean, Ian Cooper was saying in his talk this morning about the .NET Renaissance, how do we make our .NET community more diverse and vibrant? The idea that we can be a bunch of white men and get an optimal result is just, that's a silly idea, basically. Yeah. There are so many more diverse viewpoints and things that we can learn that any behavior which doesn't encourage that diversity in at all scales just needs to be really eliminated. Sorry, off soapbox.
So is that a shirt you made? Or
this was from the, if I remember rightly, DjangoGirlsStore.com. Someone pointed it out to me. So I did have... There's the he for she movement, which started a few years ago. And at the time where I wanted to have a t-shirt for that for the Xamarin Evolve conference, there weren't any t-shirts, so I did get one printed for that. And then someone pointed me at this and said, hey, this would be another good one. Yeah, that rocks. Yes.
So I guess, you know, listening to you and from what I've just seen, like on Twitter and all that, there's the step one is realizing that, you know, hey, this is out there. And then when you do pay more attention to it, then you really do become more aware of, wow, that is hard. And that, you know, it's, but I guess there's also a feeling of a little bit powerlessness and a little bit of fear of saying or helping the wrong way, you know, like trying to help and doing it the wrong way. And now you're worse off than when you started almost. I mean, the only things I'm thinking, like I try and encourage women in I have three daughters. I think about this, you know, more as they get older, but encourage women in technology that I work with just not like, hey, you're a girl, so be blah, 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 like encourage and be supportive and all that. But what else can we do? Where can we go?
So I think the first thing is you mentioned being afraid of doing the wrong thing. And there are two aspects to that. One is being afraid of being called out for not handling things sensitively or whatever. And that's just a matter of, well, grow up and take the pain. If you get criticized for doing something, so what, really? If you compare, small example, I wrote a blog post on my non-code blog and was called out by one of my favorite feminist authors, who I'd sort of tagged in the tweet. And she said, you're going about this all the wrong way. Wow, there are so many things wrong with the post. And she very kindly did a sort of 12-tweet thread of these are the problems with it. And so I didn't modify what I'd already written because I'm not a fan of revisionism, but I added a sort of prefix saying, yeah, I agree, these are things wrong. Some of the ideas at the heart of the post were okay, but you know, thank you for calling me out and educating me on it because it was done nicely. If I had been a woman writing that post and had been called out not by a feminist, but by someone who disagreed with the actually more feminist aspects of it, I could have been doxxed, you know, horrible rape threats, all kinds of stuff. So any negative reaction that allies get is nothing compared with the horrible reactions that you see all the time. what I think is a more real, more reasonable fear is of genuinely making things worse, not for you, but for the people that right. you're trying to empower. And I think the best way of avoiding that is to, and this is kind of a radical thought, ask people and listen to them. Say, you know, I know this sounds absolute madness asking someone how they would like to be empowered, but yeah, ask people, believe the experiences they tell you about, and that doesn't make things easy, and I'm sure I'm still messing up in various ways, but I think you're at least a lot less likely to make things worse. And there can be times where some people will say you're making things worse and other people will say you're making things better, and I don't know what you do about that. I wrote a post about diversity and speaking engagements saying, you know, when I look, if I'm invited to a conference or if I'm thinking of applying with a call for papers, I will look at what they've got in the way of something like a code of conduct, and do they have not necessarily something as blatant as, you know, we want this number of women or whatever. You know, it can be rather better than that by saying, we acknowledge that for many people, not just women, not just people of color, but for a lot of new speakers, there can be an awful lot of blockages between your great ideas and presenting them on stage. So how can conferences help to reduce that friction, remove those fears, make it a great experience? And also, how can you make it a great experience for attendees as well? You know, we're all well aware of awful things that have happened, and a good, strong code of conduct that's actionable makes a big difference. So I posted about that and had some people say, this is entirely the wrong way of going about things. It ends up in discrimination, all kinds of things. Other people saying, yeah, go for it, John. And this was just how I choose which conferences to go to. This wasn't me taking any very significant action, you know, going on an initiative or something. And you weigh up the comments and you listen to them. And you certainly don't dismiss criticisms unless they're coming from, if the rationale for the criticism is, you know, women can't do tech or something, then sure, I'll just blank that out.
Right, right.
But if there's a real, hey, I get called out at my workplace because I'm black and I'm the only black person on my team and it's always an issue and this kind of thing makes it worse, mm-hmm. then I do have to take a step back and say, okay, right, well, how can I achieve the same kind of goals without that negative corollary? But I think being actively engaged in trying to do something is definitely better than saying, oh no, the world is terrible, I will sit back and wait for it to get better.
Yeah.
And better to get called out having tried to do something and maybe doing the wrong thing. You'll learn from it. If we took the same approach to code and said, I won't write any code because there might be bugs, then we would never find those bugs and we would never write, you know, code that mostly works. We'll never get to... I was going to say we'll never get to true equality, and I doubt that we'll reach true equality during my lifetime, but I hope we'll make huge strides towards it, just like I will never write perfect code, but I can write code that works for almost all cases.
All right, well, thanks a lot, John. It's great talking to you.
Thank you. It's been great fun.